Hi, everybody. Welcome to SEND Network's ongoing Training for Trainers resource. Thanks for joining us on our journey to learn together how to make your transformational training even better. We want to encourage and empower you to keep growing in your confidence and competence as a trainer. Now, here are the hosts for today.
Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Duncan with SEND Network Training. We are excited that you're joining us here on this call. With me is my co-host, Sam Dula. Hi, Sam. How are you doing, sir?
Doing great, Rick. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and I'm very excited also that we have with us Dr. Craig Ott. Dr. Ott is Professor of Mission and Intercultural Studies at Trinity Evangel Divinity School. He got a BA from California State University in Long Beach, and then his MDiv and PhD there at Trinity. His fields of expertise include theology of mission, contextualization, church planting. He served for 21 years in Germany with Reach Global, which is the EFCA International Mission, formerly known as EFCA International Mission. He's planted churches in Schaumburg, Illinois, and in several cities in Germany, including Munich. He's taught or consulted national and mission leaders in 40 different countries. I said 40 different countries. So he and his wife, Alice, live in Buffalo Grove, Illinois. They've got three grown sons, which I'm in the three grown sons fraternity as well. His hobbies include bicycling, film, guitar. He's written a number of books. One of special interest to us would be Global Church Planting, published by Baker Academic. So anyway, hey, thank you, Craig Ott, for joining us on this call. Appreciate it very much.
Well, it's a delight to be with you, and I always enjoy speaking with church planters and people who are interested in learning more.
And so tell us just a little bit. I mentioned a couple of things about your church planting journey, but give us some more detail. Put some more color to that.
Sure. Well, that's kind of a long story. I'll try and keep it fairly short. But, you know, I grew up as an atheist, and my starting years in college, I became a Christian. That was the Jesus movement. And the first church that I actually became a member of was the church plant. So it was sort of in my blood from being a new Christian. During my seminary years, we had a student project that planted a church in the Chicago suburbs. And then, as you mentioned, we were involved in four different church plants in Germany. And then I began to sort of transition into teaching church planting and coaching other church planters, especially when the Iron Curtain fell. There were a lot of opportunities in the East, so I was working both with expat missionaries that were going in as well with some of those national churches that were retooling for the new situation. So I did that for a number of years. And then for the last 17 years, I've been teaching at Trinity, but my position is such that 25% of my time is still devoted to international work. And most of that is doing training for grassroots church planters, national movements, as well as expats, and doing consulting with missionary training for emerging mission movements. So that's been just a tremendously exciting journey. I have to pinch myself every now and then to make sure I'm not just dreaming my dream occupation to be able to serve the Lord in so many places and meet so many exciting people and be where I'm at. So that's sort of the short version.
Well, that's exciting. Daniel Yang, who's with the SEND Institute, and some of our trainers know Daniel because Daniel has been trained as a trainer as well. He's the one who told us that you really need to talk to Craig Ott. So that's why we're doing this. So tell us a little bit about your relationship with Daniel. How have your lives and ministries intersected?
Yeah, well, I've known Ed Stetzer for a number of years now, and we've collaborated on a couple of things. Ed is also an affiliate professor here at Trinity. And as Daniel was working with Ed Stetzer and then went to work with Ed at the SEND Institute at Wheaton, that's just down the road from us at Trinity, and Daniel was going to desire to pursue further studies. And so we were a natural place to come for him to do that. So he became a student in our PhD in intercultural studies program. We have an emphasis, by the way, not only in more traditional cross-cultural mission, but mission in Western culture. And so we've had a number of people like Daniel who've come in to engage Western culture more missionally and understand the dynamics with greater depth and hopefully greater fruitfulness. So that's how we got connected to Daniel. And he's been a great guy, and he's going to actually help me a little bit teaching our basic church planting course this summer. And I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, good, good, good.
Dr. Ott, as you were just sharing a little bit about working with Daniel, because Daniel's a dear friend, I would love to hear, how did God actually call you into training the next generation of planters? That seems to be something that resonates with you.
Of course, like I guess a lot of younger church planters, you start out, can I plant a church, period? can this sometimes you make a lot of mistakes along the way, and you're just trying to survive and trying to keep your head above water. And so for quite a while, both our first church plant in the U.S. and then overseas, that was kind of the mode we were in. But as God began to give us a little bit of wisdom and a little bit more visible success, at least, I did some study. I got my PhD and then was invited to teach church planting at a couple of seminaries in Germany. And that kind of whet the appetite. And then when I started doing more coaching church planters throughout Central Europe, that just gave me a little broader perspective and got me more excited that it's not just about God using me to plant a church, but helping others to become effective church planters. And so I gradually transitioned from teaching the course now and then sort of on a part-time basis, eventually to having a full-time teaching position at a missionary training seminary, basically, Academy of World Mission in Germany, training future church planters and future missionaries from Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. So that was sort of the transition. There was a point when we had finished up planting a couple of churches in Munich and the area. The German Free Church that we were cooperating with wanted us to go to Berlin. There were just tremendous opportunities in Berlin, and that was a very tempting offer to go do that, very exciting challenge. At the same time, the invitation came, would you be willing to come and do full-time training of others, combining that with your coaching throughout Central Europe? And that was a critical deciding point. Do I want to keep doing it myself, or do I want to help multiply even my own ministry and equipping others?
Wow.
And we felt that the latter would be the most leveraging route to go with our ministry at that point.
What can we learn from church planting in Europe to better train our planters right here in North America?
Europe is much further down the post-Christian road than America is. There's still a lot of Christian heartland, so to speak, a lot of Christian remnants, values in the American society. But as we all know, America is increasingly moving away from that, becoming more polarized. And Europe in general is much more post-Christian. For a much larger percentage of the populations, Christianity has been written off as sort of a hierarchical social institution. They do some social services, but pretty irrelevant in terms of personal life, if not dangerous. So if we want to prepare the church in America to engage now and in the future a more post-Christian kind of society, I think we can learn from the Europeans. Well, what would that look like? Joyfully, boldly, counterculturally, being willing to go out and engage people and share the gospel. It's not about some cleverness. The more the gospel or Christianity is viewed as irrelevant or dangerous, the more we're just going to have to put it out there. Specifically, we think of the Alpha Course, which, of course, came out of the UK and is still having some effectiveness. The style of being more dialogical versus confrontational approach to evangelism, the social aspect of having a meal together, giving people time over weeks to process, and so on. those have been approaches that have really connected well in a sort of post-Christian, sort of skeptical environment. I would say, too, the power of Christian community. You know, I always like to, when we were particularly church planting there, when a person would come to faith in Christ fairly shortly thereafter, to ask them, what was it that sort of turned the corner for you that made you embrace Christ and that said, this is not just somebody else, but this is for me. To my chagrin, they very rarely said, well, your sermon did it for me. what I would hear often enough would be that non-Christians had been engaging with Christians in various ways or in discussion groups. And they said they just couldn't get over the way Christians were relating to one another, caring for one another, having marriages that looked different and so on. And I think in the U.S., we're a very individualistic society, but rediscovering the power of community in evangelism and inviting people into that community. Sometimes people have talked about belonging before believing and so on, and that means different things to different people. But the idea of exposing non-Christians to genuine Christian community, and by that I don't mean just going to a large worship service with very inspiring music or preaching, but that more relational dimension, I think that needs to be rediscovered. That has been very powerful and germane. One of the things, for example, this image of the church as being sort of this institution is rather cool and cold. The idea of the church as a community of people, for many Europeans, that's kind of a new idea. And I think maybe that needs to be rediscovered in North America. I could go on for a long time about this, but that's a teaser, I guess.
Just put the gospel out there in a culture that's less familiar with it and actually maybe even closed off, and kind of watch God do what God does, like Romans chapter 1, verse 16.
You know, a lot of people have been exposed, so-called all Christians are hypocrites and so on. And of course, we have, national level scandals of religious leaders in various denominations. And so authenticity is a real key word here. Classic apologetics will only get you so far, but authentic Christian lives, people who are very genuine, who have experienced change, who remain humble. I think of David Bosch's language of bold humility. Sounds like an oxymoron, but we're bold because we're confident in the gospel and who God is, but we're humble because we're just beggars who have found bread. We're not perfect yet, but God is doing a work. That's kind of attitude or spirit, I think, needs to be more prevalent, not the sort of combative spirit, which you pick up in the media often. The media picks up on this sort of combative Christian spirit, and I don't see that as being compelling for most non-Christians.
Would you say, in order to better train our planters here in North America, we can learn some of the same tips from church planting in like the 1040 window? Would you, because I love how you mentioned discovering the power of community and living more communal, and the 1040 window is probably more the norm in so many instances. Would you say that church planting in the 1040 window has some of the same advantages that you've noticed when it comes to planting in Europe?
Partly because just the general environment is more hostile towards Christianity, and we don't have sort of a Christian tradition, formalism or nominal Christianity. So there are parallels, but of course, cultural differences are enormous. And so I'm always a little reluctant. That question gets asked very often. And, I sometimes hear people say, well, just do what they're doing in India or in China. And it's not that simple. But nevertheless, I do think there's some things we can learn. There are some very exciting movements in the so-called 1040 window. There are also challenges. They're still very resistant areas, so it's not, we don't want to idealize what's happening. But having said that, I would say there's definitely a greater emphasis on prayer and spiritual dynamics. Our reality in the West, we are still very influenced by a naturalistic worldview. We just It doesn't come naturally to us to view things in a spiritual light, to pray. I think there's sort of, that's just something I've noticed, and there's a different way of looking at life. Religion and the rest of life are not in these separate boxes, the same way that we tend to do in sort of our enlightenment way of looking at life in the West. Rekindling that sense of the spiritual realities of life and the importance of prayer and so on. I would say the other thing that, and this comes to your concern about training the next generation of planters and getting towards reproduction or multiplication versus addition. Probably one of the most outstanding features of I'll just call it majority world Christianity and church planning is just the tremendous mobilization of ordinary Christians who share their faith and start simple churches. As long as we're thinking in terms of buildings and budgets and programs and so on, that makes church planning a daunting task. It costs a lot of money, a lot of resources. Do we have the talent? Do I preach as good as the next preacher down the street? And do we have a dynamic enough worship leader? When we're in that mode, then yeah. But on the other hand, if you look what's happening in the other parts of the world, and you have just a tremendous mobilization of ordinary Christians starting very simple churches. I think of a guy, his name's Krishna, which tells you he's a first generation believer from Hinduism. And he had sort of adopted, he's in Nepali, and we were doing church planter training in Nepal. And he had adopted sort of a very traditional way of looking at sort of a Western style church with buildings and so on. Paid staff, and he came to our planting training convinced that, you know, they didn't have the resources to really plant churches. Well, when they heard that it's okay to plant churches with low resources and simple churches and house churches and so on, he went out, took simple training materials and started doing it. We came back a couple years later, and he'd started 9 churches and villages.
Wow.
Going around preaching and so on, and he's continued on. He's training others.
Wow.
This person does not have any Bible school training. So ordinary people being mobilized, the training is very low tech. When we do this kind of grassroots training, our system is to do a basic training, which is we're invited usually by national church or coalition of churches. And then we come back and do a follow-up. And then the third time training for trainers is for those people who are really implementing. But we try and keep it simple enough that they can reuse it and train others. And so I think sometimes we've made church planning very complicated because our approach is to plant complicated looking churches with big staffs and buildings and programs.
Mm.
And that is complicated. So if that's what you want to do, yeah. But that's not the way it's happening in probably most of the world these days. I think just to give you a simple story here, we were in Ethiopia and a basic church planter training had been done. One of the people in there had redone it with 20 other key people in Ethiopia. He was an Ethiopian. 9 months later, we went for a follow-up training by invitation. There were about 30 men that came. Now, in a nine-month period, that training had gone 4 generations. These people who had been involved, those 60 people from those 3 groups of 20, had gone and were using. They were training ordinary their youth groups with this material, and. So obviously not everybody was going to go plant a church, but 450 people had been trained and 55 new churches had been started, mostly among unreached people groups and some in very hostile environments of persecution. One of the guys had taken, we had a very simple sort of notebook with fill in the blank type note sheets and so on. And and it was maybe, 15 pages or so. He had boiled this whole down to a little A5 sized piece of paper that he was using. He said, that other was too complicated for my people. He was training together. And so I teach in a seminary and I wrote a thick book on church planning. So I I believe that as movements grow, you need people who are theologically trained to sustain mm-hmm. the movement, to keep it healthy, and so on. I'm not downplaying the importance of theological education. But when it comes to multiplying communities of believers, whether they're house churches or cell groups or life groups, whatever you call them at that level, there's a lot more mobilization that could be done. And that can even be done in sort of the cell celebration model. But we tend to celebrate the big names, the big people who planted the big churches with big numbers, and then mm-hmm. that model. Yeah, whereas the mobilization at the grassroots level, from the bottom up, so to speak, where increasingly, I think, as the attractional model begins to lose its traction, as the culture becomes more post-Christian, that grassroots approach is going to become more and more the real driver of church planting, I think, in North America.
I do think that that's one of our issues within our network is we celebrate the church plants that make the big splash. They got the big numbers. They celebrate the appearances of the church that's two decades old. That's what J.D. Payne says. preaching and music and programming like a church that's been around for a long time. And, of course, we praise God for that. But we know that many people sit in churches like that and think, well, I could never get on the stage and actually lead in that large of a context. So they just sit and soak and consume. Mm-hmm. How can we change the conversation so that we can empower ordinary believers to be engaged in the harvest as leaders? How do we help train the church planter to begin to think differently about his people?
Yeah, you know, I don't think we need to reject the mega church model or more traditional forms of being the church, but some of those forms have to be augmented. You know, we're not living in little villages where there's a town square and the church is in the middle of the town square and everybody knows each other face to face and so on. Our societies are much more complex. I attend a mega church, a multi-site church. But I do think that whether you have a more traditional form of church or mega church, the emphasis needs to shift to mobilizing at the grassroots level. And in Ephesians 4, that God gave to the church, apostles and prophets and pastors and teachers and evangelists and so on, for the equipping of the saints is not done when you preach a good sermon on Sunday. It really, but I mean, frankly, that's the way a lot of seminary trained people and the way a lot of our churches work. That people just show up and hear the sermon, that the Word of God will do its work, and you don't need to do much more. But that's just not our reality. And especially if we want to be more missionally engaging in our communities, we're going to have to do much better at really empowering. And that means mentoring, that means going with people, helping them start these home groups or helping them get engaged in their community and celebrating those people. It's not just the pastoral staff that should get the applause at the anniversary. You know, how about those ordinary sort of folk that would never preach, they're engaging their neighborhoods, and celebrating them, letting them tell their stories, holding them up as role models. I think that's one way we can kind of, whether you're in a large attractional sort of church or not, those are the kinds of role models that need to be celebrated. And we've got to gear our energy that way, one-on-one or leading small groups to be more missionally engaged. I just don't think there's any other way.
Thank you. That's good thinking. I like that.
I would just say one other thing too about larger churches that plant daughter churches. I was just in Hong Kong, and the church was several thousand people. So they're going to start a daughter church, sending out several hundred people, and a lot of that's done in the States too, and that gets it up and running pretty quickly. But I have consistently been an advocate of what I call the Gideon principle. And that is less is more. And so, especially if you're starting a daughter church or just recruiting a pioneer team, it's not about the large numbers to have some kind of critical mass, but it's about the kind of people you have more than the number of people you have. And, you know, Gideon started out with 32,000 soldiers, got down to 10,000. That was still too many. They got down to 300. Now, that looks like you're moving in the wrong direction if you want to win a battle against a nasty enemy. And yet they were the right 300. And I like that as sort of an illustration. Yes, recruit a team, but are those people who have a missional DNA, do they have a real passion for the lost? Are they willing to commit all the way? That will set the DNA of the church. Mm-hmm. And that is hard to change later on. If you start your core with sort of a serve me, let's give me all the programs mm-hmm. approach, then, you know, the way you win is the way you keep them. But if you mm-hmm. want to start a church that's focused on evangelism, discipleship, on missional living, then you've got to have your launch team totally committed to that kind of way of being Christian and being the church and engaging the community. And that will set the DNA. There will always be people who come along later who aren't as committed, but that sets the vision. And that's very difficult mm-hmm. to change later down the road.
And of course, you would agree that the planter needs to model that for the core team. And let's suppose that planter has come out of the big box attractional church. So, yeah, he's led people to Christ, but it's people that have just come to the church to be one. And of course, I believe that's it. That is a decreasing number of people that are going to come to a big box church and then trust Christ. So how do we help that church planter that's never really been trained to reach secular people in the harvest? How do we can tell the guy that's what he's supposed to do, but how do we actually train him to go do that?
That's a really important question. And you know, I remember my first church plant. This is going way back, a whole another millennium, you know, just going and knocking on doors and every couple months trying a different evangelistic approach, but having a very hard time, you know, really building relationships and so on, getting connected in the community. But in Europe, what we did with our church planting teams is we had sort of a rule. Every member of that launch team had to be involved in some community organization and not a Christian one. Yeah. For me, it was getting involved in sports. It might be adult evening school. It might be volunteering in a hospital or retirement home or a club. Or everybody finds a way to get out and get connected in the community. Now, that has a couple of advantages, and it's not, I mean, one advantage is obviously just building relationships that can become, you know, evangelistic opportunities, but that may not even be the primary one. It may be just getting your head out of the Christian bubble and relating to people who are not Christians and understanding how they think, what their aspirations are, what their questions are. You know, I find out that many times people, you know, pastors who are, you know, been trained and been in the church for a long time, you just lose kind of the ability to relate to unbelievers. So to me, that's one thing that is not that difficult. Find an area of interest, get out into the community. The other thing is, of course, community service. Whether you do this as a group or some other way, you get out and have forms of community service that demonstrate we're not just here as a little holy huddle off in the corner, but we are here to be involved. You know, that's something I've had to push myself on even now as a seminary professor and traveling a lot. I've found a way to volunteer at a drug treatment center for addictions treatment center for teenagers and their parents. And that's a way for me every week to get out of the bubble. And that sometimes that has evangelistic opportunities. A lot of times, most of the time it doesn't. But it keeps me in touch, and it helps me to serve in ways that may not always be explicitly gospel ways to serve, but indirectly, yes. So we need those role models, absolutely, and I think that needs to be a part of our church planner training, that this is okay. And the other thing is having church cultures. This, again, is why your team is so key. Now, if you've got your launch team, a bunch of people who say, but wait a minute, your job is to serve us, And if you've got any spare time, go and do this and that. You know, then you're dead in the water. Yeah. You've got to have your team of people or whoever your sponsors are of saying, yes, that's a part of what we do. That's who we are. And they're going to be supportive of that. And of course, as the church grows, then the needs within the church grow also. That, you know, it's inevitable that more energy has to be focused to the needs of the people in the church. But we continue to tell the stories. We continue to be an example. We continue to keep that vision outside the walls of the church alive, and that very direct and personal involvement. And, you know, it was with Jesus in Matthew 9. It's as he's engaging people that his heart is broken and sees them as sheep without a shepherd. And then he turns and he expects the disciples to be praying about this. And then he sends the disciples. And it's that direct engagement. Mm-hmm. Because the more we're losing touch with a lost world, the more we start, you know, worrying about ourselves and having our needs met and then bickering and all the rest.
One of our first podcasts was with Bob Logan, and he made that same point that you're making. And that is, if I'm going to be an effective trainer of church planters, then I need to be personally engaged in the harvest as well. I can't ask a planter to do what I'm unwilling to do. And of course, the planter can't ask the core team to do what he's unwilling to do. We appreciate the time, the effort, the energy, the passion, and the teaching to us. So we appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, it's been a good experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have a good day then.
All right. God bless.
All right. God bless.
Thanks for listening today. Our mission at Send Network Training is to equip multiplying leaders with reproducible systems to plant more healthy churches. You can follow us on Twitter at Send Network Trainers or on Facebook at Send Network Church Planter Trainers. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. This podcast was made possible by the Send Network of the North American Mission Board.